Welcome to History 605, South Dakota State Historical Society's podcast, where we talk to historians, curators, filmmakers, artists, and authors about how they interpret the past.
10,000 years from now, I think we can meditate and wonder whether our descendants, because I think they'll still be here, what they will think about us. And let us hope that at least they will give us the benefit of the doubt.
I'm Dr. Ben Jones, South Dakota State Historian and Director of the State Historical Society. Join me and our guests as we think historically.
So it is most appropriate and fitting that in our first year of our second century that this should also be a year of reconciliation between the Indian people and the non-Indian people alike.
History 605 is sponsored by the Gruver Family Trust and done in partnership with South Dakota Public Broadcasting. Welcome to the show. Welcome to History 605. Today on the show, I'm honored to have colleague Jim Williams as a guest. Jim leads History Deadwood, an organization that manages the different historic sites in Deadwood to include the Homestake Adams Resource and Cultural Center. One of the other sites that we'll be talking about today is the wonderful and very unique Days of 76 Museum. This year, as the nation marks its 250th, Deadwood marks its 150th. And so I thought it fitting to have Jim come on the show and have a discussion about what Deadwood is doing, and in particular to walk through the fun parts, the unique parts, and certainly all the interesting parts about the Days of 76 Museum. So, Jim, thanks for coming on History 605.
Well, thanks for having me. It's an exciting time here in Deadwood and across the nation.
Yeah, it is. Before we talk about what's going on in Deadwood for the 150, 250, and around the nation, back up for a sec. A couple of years ago, we were doing a public outreach session at the Days of 76 Museum about the new museum and the design. I think that was late 2023. I had a chance to, I think I had about 90 minutes or so, and just afforded myself the opportunity to walk around the Days of 76 Museum. And every time I turned the corner and went into the next space, I was wowed, aghast, astonished, pleased.
Wonderful.
entertained. It was, and you managed to, or your predecessors who put that together, managed to do a lot of things that technically were very hard, and it was done very well. So, and we can get into some of that as well. I'd like to discuss kind of how the museum was put together.
Sure. But
I was about halfway through the museum, and I wondered, this museum isn't about the town of Deadwood. It's about the parade.
Right. Right.
And I think as certainly there's one portion of the exhibit that talks about the people who founded the museum and all of the things they had collected over the years about their experiences with the parade. And so they thought there ought to be a museum. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if there's any other museum in the country that has such a inspired founding that it's about a parade and not about a town or something like that. Do you know of any other local museum that's about a parade?
You know, I don't off the top of my head. And the fun part about this museum is you mentioned some important things. It's put together by the folks that lived in Deadwood.
Yeah.
And started that tradition in 1924. And it does carry that history. The fun part about the museum is when you talk to people who have been on the ground level of it, you see the pride immediately. Mm-hmm. And it's really something to be able to host that type of a site to explain to folks, this is how this community, be it focused on the parade, redefined itself out of necessity. When it started in 1924, Deadwood had lost the mining boom. Mm-hmm. And it was an economical need, but there was something going on in the country called tourism and roads being built. And you know, I always tell folks, the founding fathers of this community were pretty smart in some sense of a forward thinking. And so they got together and they thought, how can we celebrate who we are as a community and attract this tourism? You know, the early guys, they kept Wild Bill Hickok here. The stories of running up to Terry to grab Calamity Jane and bury her by her love of her life that we all know is a little exaggerated.
And
so there was always that kind of, maybe a little attraction for tourists here.
Right.
And so when they started the Days of 76 celebration in 1924, they ironically also started asking people to bring artifacts forward from the early days of Deadwood. And throughout those early years of the parade and the celebration, they would display those artifacts. And so, you know, over that time, it grew in that concept. Now, Mr. Adams, who was one of the founders of the 76, he and a group of folks, the Deadwood business folks, he built the Adams Museum. But there was always the carriages that were in the parade. Right. There was always the historic vehicles, the clothing, some of the artifacts from the ag side. And so those artifacts kind of collected more so around the days of 76 as the rodeo got stronger and such. But, you know, the point is there's family members that were part of that original process that are still involved and very passionate about the Days of 76 Museum and today's celebrations.
So if the first parade was in 1924, you said?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
The Model T is well underway and car ownership is, I would say it's not a majority of people, but there's certainly a lot of people. And yeah, you kind of alluded to it. Folks are driving from Chicago to Yellowstone, and a lot of people in between those two locations are trying to figure out how do we get them to pull over to the side of the road and stop here for a glass of lemonade or a meal or see whatever we have to show off. So the parade was around the 4th of July? Was it always on the 4th?
Actually, it was in August.
It was in August.
The first parades, I believe, were August 16th and 17th.
Okay. So I misremember.
And then over the years, it's moved to the last week or so of July. But yeah, and it's become a week-long celebration too.
Right.
Particularly with the excellence in the PRCA rodeo that now is that big focus of the events.
Yes. And that rodeo has done excellent for the town as well as for the rodeo and PRCA.
Yeah, it has. Yeah. Very blessed to have it.
A lot of championship riders and rodeo stars that go through there for that. Who are there some names that come to mind? You mentioned Mr. Adams. Who are some others that corralled, no pun intended, the artifacts from the early days to kind of tell the history and then organize the parade?
If you look at some of the business aspects of who's of Deadwood, you had the Ayers, you had Adams, you had Star, you had a number of folks that had a business interest. It actually started with the Chamber of Commerce, or the forerunners of the Chamber of Commerce. And so you had that board. I always give out a shout out to Nell Pengren. She really was the secretary of all this.
Okay.
And our archives are rich with all the correspondence that she would do, the contracting for amusements, a number of those aspects. There also was, even in 1924, and this is a unique part that the museum highlights, a significant connectivity with the reservations and the Native American participation. The parade and the celebration was to celebrate the early years of Deadwood. And so that's why they had the horse wagons and stages and things like this. But they always made an effort to work with a number of the leadership on the reservations to have significant Lakota populations participate. And there's a number of references to the fact that if you think about 1924 and you think about the history in this region with the Native American and the wars and such, there was a lot of restrictions placed on the population. And the Days of 76 was one of those areas where they could gather and still participate with some of the rituals and some of the dances and some of the celebrations that they had done as a population that they had been limited on. Okay. And so there's always the most recent connectivity really was a gentleman called David Bald Eagle, which many, I think, in South Dakota recognize that name. And he, too, was very, very active in the 60s and 70s and 80s with helping to promote and celebrate the Native American culture as it interconnected with Deadwood. Founding fathers in that business sense, you know, they were like, we've got prohibition, we've got, you know,
that's right.
How are we going to attract this economic engine here and such?
Well, and that's one of the things that the photographs in the museum highlight is that early on there were a part, you know, you think of the parades of floats of this and floats of that. There's also, as you said, American Indian Lakota presence in the parades. Were they encouraged to think about how they would to determine their own participation and how that would look and what that would mean? Or were they kind of told, you know, like any other float, you're in position 17 and you're going to start here and all that kind of stuff?
Well, you know, if you look at the parade, even to today's presentation, it's always been structured in a historic timeline.
Okay.
And so the Native Americans were very early in the parade and continue to be. Okay. In today's world, we have the dignitaries up front, things like this. But when you get into the story of Deadwood, they were very early in the front. And we've got communication that goes back to the 20s and 30s in which there's a dialogue back and forth between parade organizers and the Native American leadership on what role and how do they want to be presented in the parade and and what activities and the financial support to bring large groups to Deadwood and provide the food and the area for the grazing and the food for the horses and all of those aspects. So my impression, Ben, has been, as I look at these documents, it really was a two-way communication.
Good to know. And one of the things I wanted to talk about too, and I think it's right around the corner of the entryway. You're greeted there at the reception desk and head off to the right side. And there's on the wall, there are these tremendous photographs that have been blown up. And my colleague and I looked at those because we were thinking about, we're fighting the pixelization of blowing up a lot of photos in the,
yes,
we wanted to do. And we just stared at those in awe. How did they managed to blow this up to where it was probably, you know, a 3x3 photograph or something. And then they, did they have a glass plate negative or how did that work? And you may not know the answer to that, but I think people will be impressed at the details of the photographs as to the, and their size among many.
Yeah, I don't know the answer to exactly how they got them to that size. Cause honestly, I agree with you. There are some, I think, gosh, is that a life size person?
Yeah. Yeah.
We do have all the negatives and we do have all of the photographs that are blown up and used in the walls, but gosh, I don't know.
Yeah.
I inherited that. So I was lucky.
Well, you are lucky. Yeah. There's so many times, and I've helped a wide variety of people too, as people come to us thinking about museum displays for their small town museum or their, maybe they're doing something for a family member and they want a photograph blown up. And it's hard to do that well if you don't have the original that has a great deal of information on it, such as a glass plate negative, which is as if it's a high quality glass plate negative, you have, other than the color, you have a lot of image to work with. That's really great. So,
Now I do know that there's a number of images in the museum that are part of the Fassbender collection.
Right.
Is something that we house the Fassbender collection here in the Homestead Adams Cultural Research Center. There is a variety of negatives within that. There's a significant number of glass negatives, and then you can see the progression of photography over the course of that collection. And so a number of them, the museum and the rodeo and, or the, excuse me, the celebration and the rodeo and things was, I think, a fairly exciting topic for the Fassbenders.
And I've done a previous episode on the Fassbender collection. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So folks can go back down the dial and see if they want to listen to that. They can see that as well, or listen to that as well. Well, tell me about some of the marquee items in the museum. What do you want to brag about?
Well, you know, there's a number of things that are in there. We kind of have it in a set grouping of collections. And the first one, as you mentioned, is the celebration of the Days of 76. And in that collection, there are a number of artifacts that are significantly important to Deadwood. We have a Bible that was associated with Preacher Smith, who was here in 1876. We have a hat that is associated with Potato Creek Johnny. Johnny found the largest gold nugget here in the Black Hills. We have a complete outfit that was Deadwood Dick's. Now, Deadwood Dick is a fictitious character. But about the time of the Days of 76, they also figured out, those dime store novels have done real good. And if we have someone who is interested in portraying Deadwood Dick, and so a gentleman out of Whitewood, rancher, became Deadwood Dick.
I see.
Worked with the chamber, did the studio shots. They built him a place over by the lodge here in Deadwood, and that was his summer site where tourists could visit with Deadwood Dick, et cetera. Mm-hmm. So we have that aspect. And then as we go through, I think one of the things that is a unique component to that section of the museum is you can see the progression of how the celebration has taken place. Mm-hmm. And you can see why and how there's that pride in Deadwood and the pride in the folks that put it together. The second section that we have is really focused on rodeo. And I love that section because it gives you some details about the concept of rodeo, not necessarily who all these stars were, but, you know, what's a shoot rooster? Does the typical person who goes in the, you know, do they know what a shoot rooster is? You know, why is that part of the rodeo important?
Yeah.
There's some fun areas that kids can get involved in, and they can climb in the barrel to pretend to be a rodeo clown. But when did that concept come into rodeo? Mm-hmm. And so that's a neat component. We also are pleased to house the Don Clauser collection. Don donated his collection to the Days of 76. He was a business owner here in Deadwood and collected thousands and thousands and add another thousand of artifacts of the Old West. Mm-hmm. And so in the late 90s, he worked with Days of 76 and donated them. Don actually kicked off the need to build the new facility that we have now. Okay. In 2004, the city of Deadwood purchased the Clauser collection. And we have an agreement that we have replicated his trading post, which in and of itself was a tourist stop, basically, to go see all of these artifacts. And so if you look in there, you see the influence of Native Americans, but you also see the influence of the Chinese in the Western heritage. You see these are items that were in a typical trading post. Here are maps. Number of those things. And I always tell folks, for everything you see in the Clauser collection on display, we can replicate that three more times by what's in the vaults.
Right.
And so that becomes one of our aspects. We have a really, and Don had a lot to do with this too, a really nice representation of the Native American culture in the museum. That is on display in its own exhibit area, and that has artifacts and clothing and such from across the country. Again, in that collection, we're always very, very astute. We review it annually with the NAPRA regulations to make sure that we are in compliance with all federal regulations and such. And we had the relationship with David Bald Eagle also helped to put that exhibit together. And so it tells a regional story of our Native American population. I think the area I get the most excited about is downstairs in our carriage collection.
Yeah.
We have 60 plus vehicles.
Wow.
All but three go out every year to the Days of 76 parade. So Ben, you know, when you're looking for grant money, things have got to be pure. And so we don't always qualify for humanities funding or such because they do have replacement parts and things, but they're the rolling history.
You're trying to keep them operable, right?
Parade
worthy.
Yeah. The one that's in there that I love showing off is we have an original stage, the original stage from Cheyenne to Deadwood. I love particularly when we've got kids in there and you talk to them, you say, hey, look for the bullet holes. Because sure enough, when you look, there's bullet holes in the stage.
Uh-huh.
And then we tell that history. We have a number of working wagons that are always fun to have folks see. I think probably the beer wagon has the most pictures taken in front of it.
Sure.
But we continually work with that collection. We have a gentleman who's just fantastic in researching and doing the restoration, and we partner with the Days of 76 Rodeo Committee on keeping those wagons up and running. Our newest acquired wagon came last year. We got a sheep herder's wagon. And I was a little bit worried about putting a sheep herder's wagon in a cattle-focused museum. You know, you go back to the old range wars.
Yeah.
But it's really been a neat addition. And I was touring someone around, and they got all excited. They saw a sheep herder's wagon in a cowboy museum. And I was like, well, you know, and they were like, well, sheep herders were cowboys too. And I said, okay. And then we've got
room for all kinds there.
We do. And then we've got some really precious ones. We have, I believe, 10 of the original wagons that were in the 1924 celebration.
Okay, I was going to ask you about that.
We have a couple of pieces that are really speak to the history of Deadwood. We have a hose reel, fire hose reel wagon, that was exclusively for the Chinese section of Deadwood. There are documented photographs of the championship Chinese hose reel team that were the Black Hills. They couldn't be beat with that hose reel wagon in it. And so that's kind of a really unique tie to the cultural components of Deadwood.
Yeah, and then so there's like an aspect of the volunteer fire department. That's
And then we have a number of wagons that came from families that have donated them to be in the parade. And that's what's wonderful is the family traditions and those that are still involved with the museum now have their wagons in the museum. I think that area really kind of shows a history. It's got wagons that are chuck wagons. It's got, you know, what I call the industrial wagons, the rock haulers, the lumber wagons, the beer wagons. It's got a post office wagon. It's got a milk wagon. It's really got a neat representation of this is what was in a community.
You mentioned Clouser. What was his first name?
Don.
Don Clouser.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it strikes me that a lot of museums are built upon someone like him who collects stuff for decades. Drives his wife crazy doing so.
And absolutely.
Sooner or later, his wife says, the stuff goes or you do, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so then he winds up figuring out a path to proper care and of the collection that he's worked so hard to do. Where was the Clouser store?
It was on Main Street here in Deadwood.
So it hasn't moved too far from where it originally was.
No, and you know, the items in that collection, we have on display a number of weapons that are part of that collection too. And we've gone through with an expert just recently and tried to catalog all of the weapons and such. And, you know, we've got a couple of rare guns that we've got a rare Henry, a 1869 Henry.
Wow.
We have a Springfield. They made 450, and we have one of them.
Wow.
You know, and then we have the fun things like Seth Bullock's pistol.
Okay, that's pretty cool.
You know, yeah, those are on display too. And again, like I said, it gives a chronological history of the development of the weapons and such, and
right.
and how they were used.
Well, that reminds me, don't you have Crow Dog's rifle?
We do.
Because when I turned the corner and was reading the sign, and said, that's Crow Dog's.
Yes.
Was it a Henry, right?
Or
was
yes. It a, yeah, I believe it was a Henry.
And we have a couple action.
That, yeah, we have a couple that are attributed to maybe Calamity Jane.
Okay.
Not quite sure on that. We have a couple that were part of the Homestake Uprising when that happened. There were shotguns used. And
yeah, was that in the 1930s?
I believe so, yes.
Yeah, okay.
There are some unique things. We have a couple that saw battle at Little Bighorn. You know, and I find when you're looking at some of these things and you realize, you know, that pistol was in Seth Bullock's hands, it kind of gives you chill bumps.
Exactly.
To it. You know, oh, okay. But the foresight of the folks that built the museum is just, and many of those that did the new museum are still on the board, which is really fun to, you know, now they've got the museum and present opened in 2013. And okay. and we've worked, you know, our next step is some technology in it.
Yeah.
Our newest addition in there is a maker space for children.
Oh, okay.
And so we have a large room now, and we've integrated technology so kids can come in. One of the examples is they were doing a program on the funeral vehicles. We have, I believe, four horses and several carriages. Mm-hmm. And they did some research and they learned about getting up to Mount Moriah and things like this. And then they went to the other side of their brain and they figured out how to print little 3D hearses on our new 3D printers. So, you know, they laid the technology. Another one is we laid out a whole table of Legos and said, Deadwood just burned down in 1879. How are you going to rebuild the city? And the kids got to go, well, you know, there was a livery, so we got to have a place for the horses. And,
right.
you know, there was this. And I kind of was like,
that's like Minecraft, just, in effect.
Yeah, just having some fun.
Well, very cool. And the staff there, you work with, I imagine, a mix of volunteers and perhaps some. How many?
We do. Yeah, we have an education director that does all the education. And then we have a visitor services coordinator that works with all of the volunteers, volunteers. But we also have paid staff that man the museum. And, mm-hmm. you know, we help them learn over time. We've kind of got a bibliography of books to read.
Okay.
I know when I first got the job, I'd been coming out to the Black Hills and Deadwood for 30 plus years. Mm-hmm. I retired from higher ed and I emailed Rose Spears, our communication yes. director, and now associate director. I said, Rose, give me a list of books to read that's the truth, not the urban law, the legend or such.
Right, right.
So we work with them on that. But,
right.
you know, we also try and let people pace it as them at their own pace. Mm-hmm. We really try and keep it a family event, too. So we've got scavenger hunts for the kids and the family, and we give them a list of pictures, and they go and find, and then we get them a little prize and things mm-hmm. like that. Trying to, you know, the next step is, how do we bring to life some of the writing? Mm-hmm. How do we add? We've got some ideas to add. What's it feel like to ride in the parade in a buggy?
Okay.
Trying to give some of those immersion experiences, as well as look and say, okay, now what can we bring to the exhibits and what can we, you know, go deeper? What do we have that's deeper that we want to do a deep dive in and provide that?
You talked about your reading list and getting the books that would really give you the ground truth, and you've alluded to it in a couple of different ways. How do you, because there's certainly Deadwood, Tombstone, Abilene, these towns, in many respects, and in a very real way, are sustained by the legend, right? Not necessarily mm-hmm. the fact of the matter and what happened. And you talked about Deadwood Dick and so forth. How do you help people distinguish between the TV show Deadwood and the town of Deadwood? Where the differences are and the similarities are, or what the parade might evoke versus, you know, what really happened?
That's a really good question. One of the things that we try and do, because we'll get those questions all the time, mm-hmm. you know, well, I saw on Deadwood that Seth Bullock and Wild Bill Hickok were really great friends, and Wild Bill was helping build Seth's house. And I'm like, well, Seth came the day of Wild Bill's funeral. Not quite.
Right.
Part of it is understanding you're not going to eat the elephant in one bite with what the urban law is. But if you can lay out mm-hmm. some of those bigger timeline pictures, not negating the urban legends and things, but bringing in some other components. You know, when we talk about, when someone says, oh, did you watch the Deadwood miniseries? I'm like, yeah. And they're like, what'd you think? And I my standard answer is, can you imagine the smell? I think they really recreated what the street looked like in a really good manner. Some of the storylines, there's some of the common characters we had, but, you know, as some of it is poetic, you know, I always get the question, did they swear like that? And I'm like, probably.
Several months ago, I was looking through the territorial code, and there was a law against swearing in Dakota Territory.
Yeah.
And I posted that on social media, and somebody said, did they tell Al swearing?
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, so I think what we try and do is not temper the enthusiasm, but give them another way to look at some of those things. You know, in our brothel tour, we talk about the Gem Theater. It was not a happy place.
Right.
For many. And so we said, yeah, that parallels pretty well what, you know, and then they say, well, did Al look like that? And like, well, we're not 100% sure what Al even looked like, you know, and have those conversations. I think the biggest one I get, though, Ben, is where are the Chinese tunnels that are the opium dens? Not quite. They left in the 80s when the person who developed that program, from what I understand, but.
Well, I know the archaeology that digs around Chinatown has turned up opium pipes, and there's something like that being smoked. It's not necessarily how it was portrayed there in the HBO show. Well, and what's the line from The Man Who Shot Liberty Valance at the end of the movie? This is the West, sir. When the legend becomes fact, you print the legend. But I do think I tend to agree with you that shows like Deadwood or Little House on the Prairie, if they draw people's interest in, I'm all for it. And if they continue to have a curiosity and want to read a book that's properly done, or go to a museum that's well done and learn something, I'm all for it. So,
well, and I think, you know, I think about the Deadwood series, you can't look at that and say, boy, that was an easy life. You know, I think they nailed, this was a hard life coming here. And it was not the romanticized components that some of the dime store novels did.
Right. And I mean, it is amazing too, or not, maybe it's not amazing, but it's interesting to note that the myth making began immediately. The dime store novels, the comic books, as we would call them, I don't know if they used that term then, but in the 1870s, the folks on the East Coast are just buying this up. Custer and Sitting Bull and Crazy Horse, they're celebrities of the highest order because of what's going on. So,
well, even in Custer's expedition and the report of gold started here, and before you know it, it's in Bismarck and all these papers going east. It's like, you know, the place glows.
Right.
And I enjoy, part of our 150th celebration is we have loaned as part of a partnership with the community. The library will have a newspaper display, and on display in the library is the very first newspaper printed in June of 1876. It's very interesting to read what the tone was going on in the nation, what the stories were here in Deadwood and kind of think back and like, ah, this is kind of how maybe that new life, I can start over because I'm coming out of these hard economic times nationally.
Yep.
I can go here. You get that real good sense.
Right.
And I love the editorial in it. It talks about, hey, listen, do you know what it takes to get something like this printed?
Yeah.
You know, this is nowhere where we want it, but you try printing in the woods in a tent.
And, you know, and printing presses are heavy, right? I mean, you don't just throw that in your backpack and
head into the hills.
That's it's quite an effort to get it printed. So that's kind of amazing. In June of 76, when, by the way, they're violating the treaty. And the president really wishes they weren't there.
Right. Then the gold kind of starts to come in and it's like, well.
I would like to go through those papers. And experiences like that in the past where they don't know how it's going to turn out. And they're writing the day-to-day stuff, having no idea that Little Bighorn and all that kind of stuff is going to happen to them. The desperation and the sense of hope and tomorrow a brighter day will come, all that kind of thing into the front page some way, shape, or form. It's there.
Well, and then the whole, you know, being outside what's going on the national scene, you know, days before they would find out something's happened and be like, oh, we thought it was this way. And the other fun part is if you ever get a chance, peruse the advertisements.
Oh, I know.
So-and-so has got the cleanest sheets in town and, you know, my cook's better than your cook and, you know, our eggs are fresher.
Yeah, lots of cigar ads. We did, too, want to talk about the 150th. So what are you doing for the 150th as the nation celebrates the 250th? Deadwood is celebrating, as we just pointed out, the 150th of the community.
Sure.
So how are things looking for the summer of 2026 in Deadwood?
It is going to be an exciting time in Deadwood. The first thing that I'll tell you is when you arrive in Deadwood this summer, you will know we are celebrating. We have had a bunting program in which we have worked with the 150th committee, which is a lot of great folks, are working with our chamber and our Main Street initiative, and people can purchase bunting. The ordinance has been changed, so from the middle of May to the middle of October, the place will be covered in red, white, and blue bunting. I can guarantee you that because I've been filling the orders and we're busy on that. So that's kind of one of the visuals. I think our next big event is Arbor Day. Working with some folks, the community is going to plant 150 trees.
All right.
That first come, first serve in celebration of the 150th. And then we have a location picked out down towards the days of 76 for our Liberty Tree. Okay. And we're going to follow that tradition, building a Liberty Tree. In May, a little bit more modern history, we are going to reenact the raid on the brothels. The brothels were raided in May of 1980. It's hard to believe that they were in operation.
1980.
Yes. Never legal, but always a part. And I was just interviewing a gentleman, you probably know Bill Walsh, and we were talking about the history. And he said, you know, in 1980, when the brothels closed, he said that was a significant economic hit to Deadwood. He goes, you wouldn't think it, but it was, that was one of the significant tide changes in the community. And so what we're going to do is we're going to replicate the FBI raid.
Okay.
And then we're going to gather at the lower part of Main Street because a few days later, they had a Save Our Tails parade.
Oh, boy.
And they had a protest parade. And so we're going to replicate the parade. We're going to kind of show some of the decades. Dora DeFran, a.k.a. Chris Entz, is coming for the weekend to do some presentations.
Okay.
So Dora will be here in a buggy with her husband, Joe.
And the historical Dora was, remind the listeners who that is.
The historical Dora was one of the madams here in Deadwood, okay, in Rapid City in Belle Fourche. She was quite a business lady. We might say she was the first to franchise the entertainment industry. She had several brothels here within the Black Hills. But the complexity of her, she also was very passionate about medical health. And she retired working for a doctor in Rapid City, mm-hmm, and would do a number of things with communicable diseases that no one else would. So, another one of those complex Deadwood, yeah, characters, not quite what you think.
Yeah.
So we'll do the Save Our Tales Parade. That's the start of Memorial Day weekend.
Okay.
And then in June, we've got a little friendly rivalry. We're going back to the 1880s to play baseball.
Okay.
With authentic uniforms and authentic, okay, rules, and we're taking on lead. And then in July, for the 4th of July, we go up to Deadwood, and Lead takes on Deadwood. And okay, so that's been really fun planning with Lead and Deadwood, that event.
Okay.
Also in July, we have the Days of 76 parade.
Yeah.
We are being very supportive of Lead's 4th of July celebrations. And so, again, we're encouraging that partnership. But the Days of 76 will happen in July. In August, we're doing the funeral of Wild Bill. And right now, it is set that one of our longtime city commissioners and retired Episcopal priest is going to change out his Episcopal garments for that of Charlie Utter, because, okay, that's who buried Wild Bill.
So, okay,
Father Mike's planning to be Charlie Utter.
Okay.
That'll be in early August. September, we've got another fun little event between Deadwood and Lead. It's a Volksmarch, and we have a certified Volksmarch program that will start in Lead and come down the Homestake Trail, okay, which connects the two cities through the ridge. It's the old N-Gauge Railroad Trail.
Oh, very good.
And in Deadwood, then folks can participate in a chuck wagon dinner. It's our first attempt on that. Lots to learn, but we're having fun with that. In October, we will set the time capsule at the Adams Museum. And then November, we will celebrate the anniversary of gaming. And okay, we're working on getting a few of the folks that were the Committee of Seven to come back and participate in that. Okay. And then in December, we wrap it up with the first telegraph coming into Deadwood, and that will light the Christmas tree. Wow. We're going to cheat a little bit because the first telegraph came from Cheyenne,
okay,
but we're going to bring it in from Pier and have the governor wish Deadwood happy holidays. So,
Sounds good.
Busy year. Lots of folks involved. Huge community. Yeah. Community support, you know, and for one person, there's probably 25 behind the scenes doing a lot of work, too. And it's a neat experience.
Well, yeah, the Days of 76 Museum is just one aspect of how Deadwood does things. And it sounds like everything is going to be trimmed and bunting. And you guys have a lot of wonderful things planned for the 150-250.
Yep. We do.
Well, thanks, Jim, for coming on the show and enlightening us about the museum and all the plans and wish you luck in all your endeavors.
Well, thank you very much. And we encourage everybody, you know, if you need a long weekend or such, come on out to Deadwood and explore some of the history. Thank you, Ben.
We'd like to thank Howard and Dorothy Gruver for their passion for history and the support of the South Dakota State Historical Society. It's through gifts such as theirs that we're able to tell South Dakota's history.
When a tornado hits a town, I've never been able to figure out which houses were the Democrats, or the Republicans, or the Libertarians. I never knew who the Norwegians were, the Swedes, or the Czechoslovakians, or the Germans. Of course, everybody wants to point out who the Irish are, but other than that.
History 605 is produced by the South Dakota State Historical Society, and its audio engineer is the amazing Kevin Larson. We'd like to thank our partner, South Dakota Public Broadcasting, and most importantly, we'd like to thank you for listening. Please rate us on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you listen to fine podcasts. We'll be back in a couple weeks with another episode of History 605.